Well, good morning. It's good to see everybody, and glad you all made it out this morning. This morning, if you want to turn with me to the book of 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter, that's where we'll be this morning as we go on. How many of you know that you will not win every battle that you face? How many of you know that you will engage in some things that you will not be victorious in? We all know all too well that one day we will breathe our last breath. Our heart will beat for the last time, and we will have said our final farewells, and we will die. But even before that, we know that we won't win every battle. We use sayings like, well, you win some and you lose some. Because we know that we will not be successful in every venture that we set out on, and we won't win every battle that we engage in, no matter how just, no matter how godly our motives are, sometimes we're not victorious. With that said, this morning we're going to look at one of the most celebrated and most often discussed, or at least referenced, victories of all history. It wasn't fought by a great military general like Alexander. It wasn't orchestrated by great minds like those of Troy or the Allied forces of World War II. It wasn't even a surprise attack like at Pearl Harbor. No, this victory was won by a single teenage boy and the weapons not of a warrior, but of a shepherd. The account I'm speaking of is found in 1 Samuel chapter 17, and you don't even have to be a student of the Scriptures to know about the story of David and Goliath. This morning we're only going to look at a small section of this story, and probably a section that if you're not familiar with the Bible in depth, you may not be that familiar with some of what is said in this section. We're going to start with verse 31 this morning and follow through until verse 47. It says, when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. That's speaking of Goliath. He says, your servant will go out and fight with this Philistine. Then Saul said to David, you're not able to go and fight against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and may the Lord be with you. Then Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with his armor. David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. And David took them off. He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy and handsome in appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord, the hosts, the God of armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hands." You know, when I was a kid, we studied this with the flannel graph board, y'all remember the flannel graph boards? There was David and there was Goliath. There was never any armor, and there was never any question about Saul, we just came to it with David picking up the stones and going out and fighting Goliath. But there's more to the story than that. And unfortunately, too often, this story is used to say that this is how you're successful in your most difficult challenges. Yet I'm not sure that that's the way the author intended for this passage to be used. And I'm not sure it was God's purpose for having this account recorded in the Scriptures. And I'm pretty sure, I'm almost positive, that God didn't have it recorded in the Bible so that sports announcers would have an analogy for when the underdog defeats the behemoth. I'm pretty sure that wasn't His purpose. But the account of David defeating Goliath is about where we look for our strength, where we are looking for victory. And it's about choosing the right source for our hope. You see, if you just look at the story and follow through the story, you find that there are three different visions that people have, three different things that people put their trust in, and the story of David and Goliath is about putting your trust and your hope in the right thing. Saul and the army of Israel, they were putting their hope and they were putting their trust in weapons. They were trusting their weaponry. And what they were saying is that our weapons aren't good enough to fight, and our weapons aren't good enough to defeat the Philistines, but that is really where they were putting their trust. You see that as David goes into Saul's tent. David has come to the battle front on the behalf of his father. David is a young boy. We know that he was under the age of 20 for certain, because he was not there to fight in the war. He was there to bring supplies to his brother. This was very early in the monarchy of Israel, and so most of the time, most likely, the families would have to supply for the needs of their family members in the army. They didn't have a way of providing for the army at that time. And so if I sent my son to the battle, I would provide him with food. And so David is bringing some to the commanders, but most of what he was bringing to his three brothers who were there to fight on behalf of the Israelites. He hears the taunts of Goliath, and he talks to the men about what's going on and what will be done for the one who defeats Goliath. And word of this gets back to Saul. And Saul is intrigued. Finally, after 40 days, there's somebody that's willing to stand up and fight, somebody who trusts their strength and their abilities. And so he quickly has David brought into his tent. And I can just imagine the scene. David, or Saul, is sitting there with Abner, the commander of his army, and he's expecting somebody that's big and tall and head and shoulders above the rest of the Israelites. Oh wait, that was Saul, right? When Samuel anointed Saul as king, that's what the book of Samuel says about him. That he was head and shoulders above the rest of the Israelites. That he was a man's man. And so Saul is expecting this, and here comes this boy. And I've always pictured David about like Landon. You know, I used to picture myself as David when I was about like Landon. You know, short and skinny, and I wouldn't have scared a butterfly. This is what I picture as David. He comes into Saul's tent, and Saul is looking. Where is he? Oh, you can't fight him. You're just a boy. And then he listens to David for a while, and he says, well, maybe you can fight him. And then, you see, this is where we see what Saul was putting his trust in. Instead of asking David, how will you fight him, and how will you be able to defeat him like you did the bear and the lion, Saul naturally thinks, we've got to get this guy dressed for the battle. We got to get him dressed to go out and fight this battle that he is going to engage in. And so he takes his armor, and you've got Saul up here, head and shoulders above the rest of the Israelites. You've got the average Israelite man, and then you've got David. I wish I'd have thought about it earlier in the week. I'd have put one of my favorite pictures of Landon up on the screen. When Landon was about 3 years old, maybe four, he was walking down the hallway one night. He had on my baseball cap, and you almost could have put a fist up in front of his head in my baseball cap, and he was wearing my boots, my work boots, that almost came up to his knees. He didn't have them tied, and Brenna's trying to say that she thinks they did come up to his knees, and they might have. Or past his knees. And when I picture David in Saul's armor, this is the picture I get. It's hanging off of his shoulders. The top looks like he's wearing a dress. And then he puts on the sword, and the sword is dragging on the ground behind him because he just isn't tall enough to use the equipment that Saul has. But Saul naturally thinks that David has to be decked out in armor, and he has to have the sword, because after all, that's how you fight a battle. That's how you go to war. But I like what David says later. And in fact, David in Psalm chapter 20, he's going back to some of the things that God told the Israelites back in Exodus and in Deuteronomy, when he started to give them instructions about how they were to be a nation and what they were supposed to do. But David says this in Psalm chapter 20, verse 7. He says, some boast in chariots and some in horses, but we will boast in the name of Yahweh, our God. Saul had it backwards. Saul was trying to trust in the equipment, and he was looking at the equipment that the Philistines had and saying that we don't match up. We don't have what they have. There is no way we can compare. And so rather than going out into the battle, Saul was the one who was supposed to lead the Israelites into battle. And what is he doing? Well, he, like the rest of his troops, are sitting back in the battle lines for over a month, listening to the taunts of Goliath every day. Later, one of the other psalmists in Psalm chapter 33 says this. He says, "The king is not saved by a mighty army. A warrior is not delivered by great strength. A horse is a false hope for victory, nor does it deliver anyone by its great strength." And if you go and you read that whole psalm, you find that in Psalm 1, the psalmist begins to speak about God and what God will do for the people of Israel. And then if you keep reading, you find that the psalmist is saying, you could put your trust in those things, but the proper place to put your trust is in God. You see, we can trust all kinds of things, and we do. We trust all kinds of things in this world. But we might not trust in horses anymore for our victories, but we do trust in a lot of things. We trust that the policy and the laws of our government and that they will benefit us, and they will make it so that we can live in peace and harmony, and we believe that if something isn't right, we can work to make changes so that things will be perfect. And we believe that we can get things just right so that we can live at peace and nobody will bother us and life will just be perfect. It will be like a scene from a movie when it says, "And they lived happily ever after." But we know that that's not what's going to happen. But we put our trust in those things, and we rely on them, and it's not that they're bad, but that's not where we're supposed to put our trust. Sometimes we put our trust in our weapons. We put our trust in the fact that our government has a great army and they're going to protect us. That the weapons that they have created and the weapons that they have developed and manufactured are the top of the line, and they'll protect us. But I got to thinking about it. I got to thinking about the fact that, you know, there are these missiles in these silos that they put underground. Now, I know what happens when you put things underground for a long period of time. Things start to rust. And if you don't have rust, I know that you also have problems with mice or other natural problems that we can't always predict and provide fail-safe methods for. I mean, you look at a few years ago when one of the space shuttles blew up on takeoff. They said they believe it was because of a faulty O-ring. And you know what happens if you leave equipment sit around? The O-rings get old and they get brittle. We can't find ways to protect even our own weapons all of the time. But yet those are the things that we sometimes put our trust in. Or sometimes it's a little closer to home and it's a little more personal. We put our trusts in, well, the newest drugs. The newest drugs that are supposed to cure all of the problems that we face. And we put our trust in those men and those women whose job it is to try to find new ways to deal with the diseases that we face. Hoping to find a cure for cancer or finding a cure for muscular dystrophy or multiple sclerosis or you name it, and somebody thinks that they will find the magic pill and cure it. But you know what I've found in life? Those don't always work. They don't always work. Sometimes you go to the doctor and they prescribe one medicine and it doesn't work, and then they give you another and another and another, and they're always trying to find the one that works with your body. But they don't always succeed. And then you go on to think not just about the fact that they don't work, but sometimes... Okay, have you watched television lately when a drug commercial comes on and tried to read all of the side effects? It flashes up there in little itty-bitty print, and you're supposed to figure out what it says. Yeah, I came in with a cold, and I'm going to leave with the chance of liver damage and diarrhea for the rest of my life. Wow, thanks, Doc. That was a great plan. Or even the newest craze on the market, the CBD oils. I was reading the other day, just this week, while it's supposed to be the miracle cure, even the one drug or the one use that has been cleared by the FDA, they had to take a large percentage of their trial patients off of it because of the kidney damage that it was causing to them. They couldn't even make it through the trial because of the problems. It's supposed to be a miracle cure, but sometimes the miracle cure doesn't work. You see, we like Saul, a lot of times we face these battles in life and we put our trust in our weapons. The things that are there to protect us. The Philistines were trusting their ability. Saul was trusting his weapons and his armor, and the people of Israel were trusting in those things. On the other side of the valley are the Philistines, and they're lined up in their tents and they're waiting, and they come out every day and listen to their champion Goliath insult and taunt the Israelites, and they are putting their trust in their abilities. You see, they're looking to Goliath, who Saul says to David, this man has been a warrior since his youth. And now if you read about Goliath, and he is 9 feet tall, and he has weapons that are meant to intimidate. He carries a spear that's bigger than anyone else's. He carries a shield that's bigger than anyone else's. He carries a sword that's better than anyone else's. And he goes out into the battle, and he is at the front of the battle because the Philistines believe that there is nobody that can beat Goliath. Goliath is the unconquerable soldier. And so every day he goes out and he gives his taunt to the people of Israel, and he tries to encourage them to come engage him in battle. And he's made this deal with them. Hey, rather than we all fight and a lot of people die, let's have this one-on-one cage match down here at the bottom of the valley, and you guys root for your champion, and my people will root for me, and whoever is victorious will simply become the servants of the other army, the other kingdom. And the Philistines like their chances. Goliath is undefeated. He is the heavyweight champion of that area. There's nobody that can defeat Goliath. He's too big. He's too strong. He's too powerful. He's too crafty in his work. You cannot beat Goliath. And the Philistines stand behind him. And it isn't just his ability in battle, but he is doing some psychological warfare here. As he comes out every day with his huge size, his huge weaponry, and probably this high squeaky, probably this deep booming voice, and he says, send somebody out to fight me if you can. nobody can fight Goliath. And psychologically, the Israelites are being beaten before the battle has been engaged. And day after day, they're taking this beating with the taunting that Goliath is giving them. And day by day, they're feeling less and less capable to even approach Goliath in battle. And sometimes we put our trust in those kinds of things. We put our trust in people's abilities. We put our trust in our own abilities. We put our trust in the things that we can see. And so we trust that doctors and nurses will always be able to find the cure. We trust that they will be able to take care of everything that comes up. From an ingrown toenail to the most deep and difficult thing that you could think of. And many times they do. God has given them great wisdom and great understandings of our bodies. And many times they're able to fix things that we may not even understand and comprehend, but the doctors and nurses do. And so we put our trust in them. And it's not that we shouldn't rely on them. God gave them that wisdom and understanding, but we have to remember that they are not God. I like what C. Everett Koop, the former Surgeon General of the United States, said. He said, "I put the best stitches I can in a person. I stitch like no one else because I believe that it's the best way." He said, "But I'm not the one who provides the healing. God does." You see, sometimes we put our trust in the doctors and we want the best, because nobody else is good enough. Or sometimes it's money and we put our trust in financial advisors. Those people who are supposed to know how to handle money and tell you how you can make the most out of your limited resources. And we give them the opportunity to take care of our finances and help us provide for ourselves long into the future. Because it's money that we need. And then the market turns, or the investment strategy is wrong. They went the wrong direction. And it doesn't work out. Or maybe it's like the Israelites, put your trust in the army and let the army go about its business until they don't feel capable or they're not strong enough. Or we trust the police to protect us all of the time. But you know what I know? Is that sometimes there are unjust police officers. The ones who don't really care about the details. Or the ones that have the wrong attitudes. Well, most of them aren't that way, no, but there are some, and unfortunately you don't know which ones are protecting you. And we trust in their ability, but you know what I find? That you provide more police and they just find more crime. Nevertheless, we put our trust in those things like the Philistines did, and, well, they don't provide what they promise. Not completely. They may for a while and to some extent, but they never completely provide what they promise. And then there's David. There is Saul trusting his armor, and there are the Philistines trusting their ability. And then there is David. David has a different viewpoint. No, David knows about his abilities, and David knows about his weaponry. We're not going to deny that, but David has a different point of view. You see, David trusts in God. I want to turn your attention back to 1 Samuel and to listen to the words of David. In verse 36 and 37, he says, "Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of these, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." And David said, now, David says, "I have killed the lion and the bear." But he also says, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, He will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." Or then again, down in verses 45 through 47, David says to Goliath, he says, "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come at me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I will strike you down and remove your head from you. I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the air, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by the sword or by the spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hands." David's trust is squarely in God. David's trust is in God. And he says to both Saul and to Goliath that only God can win the victory. It's like he says later in Psalm chapter 20, "Some trust in horses and some trust in chariots, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God." We trust in the name of the Lord our God. He is the only one who can win the battle. But David clearly recognizes that he still has to use his own equipment. He's not just going to walk out into the battle and God knock over Goliath and the battle is over before it's even fought. David realizes that he's going to have to use his weapons, and so he takes his shepherd's rod and he takes his sling, which is a leather pouch with two strings attached to either end of it, and he takes his weapons, the weapons he is accustomed to using, and not the weapons of a normal battle, but the weapons of a shepherd, and he takes his equipment, and he knows that it's going to take his skill, and he selects. You know, I used to always think that when it says that he picked up five smooth stones, that it meant like the ones that I used to use to skip across the water. Little flat stones that, you know, weren't really heavy. They were kind of small. But as I was studying this week, I found that they actually were more like about the size of a tennis ball and more round in shape. I don't know that I would call those small stones, but I suppose compared to a rock or a boulder, that's a small stone. But they said that those are what they normally used in their slingshots. And so he takes his skill and he picks five stones that are just about right, the right shape, the right size. And he picks them up and he puts them in his pouch. And he takes one of those five and he puts it in the pouch of his slingshot. And he takes his skill and he winds up and he gets those rocks a rolling and around and around and around and around, and I can't remember how many rounds it's supposed to be. And one little stone went up in the air with the skill of David and the power of God. One little stone strikes Goliath and takes him out. But David, while he has to use his equipment and he has to use his skill, he's not trusting in them. Yes, he's got to use them, but his trust is in what God can do. His trust is in what God is doing and what God will do. And David is pretty confident and David is pretty sure that God will give him this victory. But I had to ask myself the question about what if. Because I like to ask those questions sometimes. What if? What if this one isn't the victory? Well, what if this one doesn't turn out for David like he thinks? Here's what I know, is that no matter what happens, Yahweh is going to get the glory. Win or lose, as David goes to fight Goliath, he is going in the name and the strength of the Lord of the hosts of the armies of Israel. He is going in the name of Yahweh to fight Goliath. And he is going to make sure that everyone knows that God is in control. And we've seen already as we've looked through the story that sometimes for God to accomplish His plans, it means that His people will be defeated. Because it was only 40, 50 years before this account that the Philistines and the Israelites were fighting and Hophni and Phinehas were killed and the Ark of the Covenant was taken as a war prize because of the sins of Hophni and Phinehas and the overlooking of their sins by their dad Eli. And so what if today wasn't the day? Well, I think that David would be kind of like someone else in the same situation. Actually, someone else. Because in Daniel chapter 3, we read this, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are standing before King Nebuchadnezzar, and he's getting ready to throw them into the fiery furnace, and he's given them one last chance, and they still refuse to bow down to his idol. And this is what they say. They say, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire. And if He will deliver us out of your hand, O King. But even if He does not, let it be known to you, O King, that we are not going to serve you or your gods or worship the golden image you have set up." Yes, we trust that God is going to deliver us, and David trusted that he was going to give Goliath into his hands, but whatever the case, David is going to make sure that Yahweh gets all of the glory. You see, and we still have to trust the doctors. We still need to take prescription medicines, but our trust has to be first and foremost in God. We need money to live. I won't deny that. And we still need to save money and use it wisely. But we have to trust in God. You see, it's about where we put our faith and where we put our hope. Do we put our hope in the things of this world or the God who created this world? Do we put put our trust in our abilities and the abilities of others? Or do we trust the God who created us and gave us those gifts, those talents, those abilities? Do we trust in our own wisdom or the wisdom of God who thought out the universe and made it work better than any clock? You know, we say things that work like clockwork. God's universe is more precise than any clock you could imagine. And it's bigger and more complex. Do you trust your abilities and your wisdom or the God who imagined our universe? You see, Saul trusted in his weapons. He trusted in the things that he thought gave him strength and power, and so he wouldn't fight Goliath. Goliath was trusting in his ability and his ways to provide him the victory. And so he was unconcerned about a little boy with a rod and a slingshot. Do you come at me with sticks and stones? David trusted in the name of God. David trusted in the God who created the things that Saul used to make his armor and his weapons. David trusted in the God who created Goliath with his great height and his great strength and his deep booming voice and his ability to make war. Because here's what David knew. That he could go into the battle on his own and be defeated just as likely as have victory. Or he could go into battle in the name of the Lord, of the God of Israel. Yahweh is his name. And trust that he and he alone could win the battle. Using David as his tool. And so David goes. And David fights Goliath. And one stone fells this great behemoth. One stone knocks him down. And David takes Goliath's own sword and finishes the job, because God won the victory. I can't promise you this morning that every victory or every battle you face is going to end in victory. I can't promise you that if you pray the right prayer or give the right gift, that God will heal you, that God will make you prosperous. But here's what I can promise you. That if you will trust in the name of the Lord your God, and you will face every battle and every challenge trusting Him, that He will do what's best in every situation. And He will give you the opportunity, no matter what you face, to use it as an opportunity to give Him the glory. Win or lose, you give God the glory, because He is the only one that's worthy. Worthy of our trust. The things of this world aren't. He's the only one who's worthy of our trust. The wisdom and the abilities of this world aren't. Only God. Do you trust this God as much as David? Do you trust Him enough to face the battles of your life?